Now, the rest of the story. Joe was a nature boy, and Joe became a natural man in an increasingly synthetic world. He was a born ecologist and environmentalist, a nature boy. I can think of so many who would provide one with an intriguing conversation on the subject, but not Joe, not unless you agreed with him wholeheartedly in the first place, because somewhere along the way, Joe became utterly intolerant of all opposing points of view. He became intolerant of industrial apologies and pollution and excuses. You name it, Joe was concerned about it. He was concerned about an ozone layer melting away in a cloud of hairspray. He was concerned about species lapsing into extinction because somebody wanted to take down a forest or put up a dam, and towering smokestacks belching toxins and interminable drift nets strip mining the seas. Without self-discipline, the planet was doomed, Joe would say. And Joe knew a lot about self-discipline, for this is the rest of the story. Growing up on New York's Long Island delighted Joe, less for the island itself than for the water surrounding it. Joe loved the water. He loved to stand there on the dock at Huntington Harbor and just admire the expanse that stretched out before him. And it hurt him to ponder those who did not share his admiration, whose carelessness so often threatened the Earth's fragile beauty. In high school, Joe excelled at everything, particularly gymnastics. The Huntington High team was an uncompromising one. An athlete would be expelled for no more than a sip of beer or a solitary cigarette or even a single swear word, but that was Joe's kind of team. Straight for the goal and no detours. That made his passion for the environment all the more frustrating. So comparatively few saw things his way. Joe attended college in the 60s against a backdrop of causes and consciousness raising, and yet when the era was over and the radicals had returned to the establishment, Joe remained true to the ideals so many had abandoned. The dichotomous concerns of ecology and environment would continue to challenge him. Like when his hometown sewage treatment plant accidentally released raw sewage into Huntington Harbor, so much of it that the beach had to be closed for an entire summer, Joe responded by complaining vociferously to anyone and everyone who would listen. Then there was the announced plan to build a nuclear power plant in neighboring Shoreham. Joe became furious. Fossil fuels were far safer for the ecology, he argued, and he opposed the new plant in every way he knew how. Let me hesitate a moment. There's a fundamental obstacle to those who would take on the world's woes, particularly as they pertain to the environment, and that obstruction is the very multiplicity of issues at hand, far too many to be addressed effectively by any one man. But ecologist, environmentalist Joe faces an even greater conflict now. A change of addresses, you might say, for Joe just recently moved into a glass house from which residence it is going to be most difficult for him to throw stones anymore. So he doesn't wail about the environment anymore, especially since the Exxon Valdez disaster, in which a supertanker ran aground in Alaska's Prince William Sound. It's being called the biggest and most destructive oil spill in the nation's history. It's being compared to the devastation of Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And it's being blamed on one man. And that's the man you've just met. The tanker's captain, Joe Hazelwood, who but for an evening's indiscretion might have been remembered among this era's most outspoken defenders of the environment. But now, well, now you know the rest of the story.